Welcome to the Nova Nation podcast. I'm your host, Rob Logan, alongside my friend and co-host, Chris Merle. On this episode of the podcast, we talk about the dreaded COVID situation and, of course, talk about your men's and women's basketball team. All that on the Nova Nation podcast. Listen up. Go Nova. Welcome back, Nova Nation. What's going on? It's the Nova Nation podcast. We're back. We got a lot to talk about. It's me, Rob Logan, and my friend, Chris Merle. We're going to cover a lot of stuff today. And first, we're going to get right into it. And the topic that I want to start off with is not an easy topic to talk about just because with everything going on, but I think it's important to talk about COVID right now and how it's affecting these games. A lot of games have been canceled, postponed, moved. There are games where teams only have eight players that are eligible. There's all these protocols and rules that make it very difficult to keep playing a healthy full team. So my question to you, Chris, to kind of start off with this COVID is it really fair? Number one, are the rules fair for the protocols of COVID? And is it fair to these teams to have to play with seven players or eight players? I mean, in the NBA, you know, you can bring players up and you can sign 10-day contracts here and there. There's a clause that I said that thinks that once somebody goes into the COVID protocol, they're allowed to pick up a G League player or somebody, sign them. You can't really do that in college. Is it fair? What's going on? And is there a way to keep playing and not have this affect us?
Hi, Rob. No, it's not fair. And to try to play a game with seven or eight people on the roster is just not good for anyone, for a competitive standpoint and just for the quality of the game. What kind of game are you going to get? Imagine if Villanova had to play a game without Gillespie and Moore and Samuels. What kind of team would you have out there? Mm-hmm. So I don't think anybody wants to see that. Now, there has to be a way where you could kind of manipulate the schedule so you could have people take rapid tests and then as soon as they are negative, they can play. I understand there's travel involved, especially in the Big East when you got teams like, you know, Creighton and Marquette that are halfway across the country. Mm-hmm. So it's a little more difficult because you're talking about, you know, airline travel. But if there was a way that they could delay the games somehow and reschedule them. Now, I guess I'll throw it back to you. What are they going to do during the tournament? Are they going to play tournament games with half a roster not being able to play?
Well, they're not going to be able to do the bubble like they did last year.
No.
I believe. So it's going to be difficult. Now, I think if I kind of see where things are going, the NFL, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but the NFL has been changing their rules about COVID on the fly, especially recently with, you know, quarantine times and all mm-hmm. these different protocols and stuff like that. And I know the reason why they're doing that is because they are getting closer to playoffs and Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell me that if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers make the Super Bowl, that they would keep Tom Brady out of the game because of COVID.
Right. And they're not going to push that game back another week.
No, they're not, because of the money. You can't do that. So they're setting themselves up for some leeway I think, with the playoffs and with the Super Bowl, you know, coming up. So I'm betting a lot of other, you know, NBA, NHL, they're going to start adapting the rules as well, because they're, nobody's going to want to lose money, especially, you know, March Madness, NBA playoffs. I mean, they're not going to want to lose money, and they'll lose money if these big time players aren't playing. The games will not be as competitive, and people will not watch them. And that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt, you know, pocketbooks. So that's where I think things are going. I think they're giving themselves some outs in case something does happen, and they're just going to see. And from a college standpoint, you just got to be as careful as possible. And it's almost impossible to control these kids, you know?
Yeah, I mean, unless you isolate the kids on campus, like you said, and then they're traveling on top of that. So you could isolate, you could do your very best while you have your kids there and in the practice facility. And I don't know their testing procedures, but if they're testing every day or when they come into the building and the coach is doing the same thing, that's great. But what happens when they have to go fly to Milwaukee or Cincinnati?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't isolate forever. So
I heard as far as how things are changing, I heard on the radio that it was mandatory testing in the NFL on Mondays. That's when all the players had to get tested. And then that's obviously the results came in, and then that kind of affected the week and the game. From what I heard, it is not mandatory anymore for the testing on the Monday. So right there, once you don't make it mandatory, players are not going to go get tested voluntarily because they're not going to put themselves at risk. And I'm right. Assuming it's going to be the same thing for these other sports. As long as they don't make it mandatory and they say, all right, well, if you're not feeling well, you should probably go get tested. You know, these players aren't going to go get tested.
No. And they tried to make it a deterrent for people to that weren't being vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
So they were trying to say like, oh, well, if you're not vaccinated, then you're going to have to test X amount of times.
Right.
Whereas if you had it, then they wouldn't make you test.
Right. Right. So. And it's not going away. Obviously it's getting worse, but to me, it so far it really hasn't affected Villanova basketball. Caleb Daniels missed that Seton Hall game due to the protocols, but we haven't really got hit to where the point where we either have to, you know, really cancel a game. The Temple game was canceled, but or supposed to be rescheduled, but that was more on the Temple side as far as not having enough players. So we really haven't had that issue yet, but I mean, this whole thing, it's not going away. My take on it is if you're sick and you don't feel up to playing, you don't play. If you're okay to play, you play. I mean, at some point you have to go back and resort back to how things were prior to COVID. You have to do that at some point, because that's the only way you're truly going to, number one, get back to normal, but number two, be able to field a complete season and a complete tournament.
I mean, I think you're on the money. And look, if I don't know what their vaccination rate is amongst the players and staff, is it 100%? Did they have to? Was it part of their ability to even play is that you had to be vaccinated? So if you are vaccinated and maybe even you got the booster and you're showing no symptoms, then I think the CDC now is recommending that if you do test positive, your quarantine time can go from 10 to 5 days.
Right. It reduces.
Right. So eventually I think it's going to get to the point where it'll be like nil. It'll even be less than that. If you're asymptomatic, of course, you know.
It's all going to come down to how you feel.
Right. And if you feel fine and you've been vaccinated and maybe even have the booster, then like you said, it comes to the point where they're going to have to make a decision where either you play or you don't, because it's going to be too difficult to reshuffle all these games, and especially non-conference games. It might get to the point where they might just outright cancel them.
Well, I mean, that's a good point for that Temple game. I mean, what's going to happen with that? Not that game is as important to Villanova as it is to, you know, Temple. I mean, Temple pulling off an upset of Villanova would be a lot better for them as opposed to Villanova beating Temple. So I could see where they would want to play the game. But for Villanova, is it really worth trying to reschedule it? You know?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how it helps their numbers. You know, is that a quality win?
Not this year.
Right. So is it worth it?
No.
Probably not.
No, especially if you're going to be at risk. You know, you're playing a team that, you know, their players were sick. I wouldn't go near that game with a 10-foot pole if I was Jay Wright.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe they do it on a neutral court in Philly somewhere. I mean, again, the campuses are only like 20 minutes apart.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows? Maybe they play that game at Wells Fargo, something like that. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But all right, so let's get into the teams because we could probably talk about COVID for a while, and I'm sure people are sick of hearing about COVID because it's probably affected their lives in some way. But on to the teams. We're going to start with the women's team, and we're going to start with first Maddie Segrist earning Player of the Week this week for Big East. Really, this women's team, it comes down to a tale of two teams. You have the games with Maddie Segrist and games without Maddie Segrist. Most of their losses are games that Maddie didn't play in. Now that she has come back, they have won 5 games in a row. She's obviously their leading scorer, averaging almost 23 points a game. Their record is now back up to 8-5. And what is really impressive to me about this team is even without Maddie Segrist missing several games, they're winning the turnover margin for the season. And I think that says a lot. They have a lot of younger guards, which, you know, without Maddie, they're kind of holding the being the glue of the offense. I really think that's cool. They do have to watch. Their opponents are shooting over 40% from the 3-point line, so they got to work on that a little bit. But it's really hard to say anything about this team because it's really two different teams with and without Maddie Segrist. So hopefully they're moving in the right direction. She's back. She's on fire. She's playing great. And can't wait to see what's coming up now that they're in the Big East schedule. So good job to the women's team. And very happy for them now that Maddie is back. Also, some honors this week. Colin Gillespie was named Big East Player of the Week this week. Congratulations to Colin. And getting into the men's team, to talk a little bit more about the men's team, I have a question. And, Chris, I want your... We didn't really discuss this too much, so I want you kind of to like have your reaction to the questions. We didn't really go over this too much, so I want to really get how you're feeling about this. So One thing that I've always said is, Coach Wright, and it's pretty well known, not big on playing the younger players. Their rotation has been, for most part of the year, seven deep. Especially with injury here or there. They brought back Cosby Roundtree, Demir, for a couple games because of the lack of depth. What's your take on the playing time, Chris, of these players? And would you do anything differently? Would you keep it the same? I mean, do you believe in that philosophy that Coach Wright kind of goes by? Or do you think you would do something different in order to prepare for the long run?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. But if you take a look at the history of the program, it's pretty much a given that he doesn't play freshmen and sophomores, really, unless they're, Sadiq Bey, mm-hmm. the guys that are in the NBA, Bridges, etc. So I even noticed a difference in the Seton Hall game without Daniels in the lineup. I mean, I think you need to see more Antoine, less Daniels, less Arch, maybe more Longino and even Patterson. I just like, these guys, Colin, Justin Moore, Samuels, they're not going to be here next year. So you're basically going to be starting from scratch with guys that don't have a ton of experience. Mm-hmm. I guess Dixon will be back. But, these guys have to play just to get the feel of how to run the offense. And I don't know. Just my sense is that I think I don't want to go off on a tangent too much, but like big picture, I think that the transfer portal is going to be dangerous for programs like Villanova, where you're not getting the one and done kids. So you're selling, come here, you're going to get a great education, you're going to play at the highest level of college basketball, but we're going to teach you how to play a certain way, my way. We're going to be great, but you're going to have to wait your turn. So kids that want to play right away that aren't the one and done kids, they might not want to come to a Villanova because they're going to have to wait their turn. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree. Now, let me ask you a question. A follow-up question to that. So let's just take somebody like Trey Patterson, right?
Right.
Coach Wright, like you said, his philosophy is to teach these guys the system, and it takes time for these guys to, I guess, understand the system. My question is, when you're getting in a five-star recruit, how much time do they really need to understand, quote unquote, the system? I would think that these players, their athletic ability would compensate or overcompensate for them learning the program.
Yeah, isn't that what November and December's for?
Exactly.
When you have these non-con games, I know this year was unusual because of how difficult the schedule was.
Right.
But, when you're playing LaSalle and St. Joe's, why can't Longino and Brian Antoine and Patterson play tons of minutes? Do we really need to see, Chris Arch and Daniels and, I'm not picking on those guys, but it's like you kind of know what they are at this point. I don't know. Like you said, there has to be a fine line between don't want to use the term seniority, but experience and development. And when, like you said, if you're getting five stars, how much development do they need? Because I see freshmen playing in all the other top programs.
Right. And here's the other thing too. That's not even talked about. To me, if that your choice of who you want to play, and hey, who's going to argue a Hall of Fame coach in Coach Wright? So I don't even really, you know, want to debate that part of it.
No, not at all.
My thought is, though, the amount of time that you are playing Colin Gillespie. Right now, Colin Gillespie is averaging 34 minutes a game. Justin Moore, 33 minutes a game. Brandon Slater, 31 minutes. Samuels, 31 minutes. So you have four guys right there all over 30 minutes a game. Isn't that going to take its toll when the games matter the most, which is come March? You know, like, to me, I wouldn't want to overplay my guys, so then when I truly do need them, they're going to be worn out, you know?
Well, I mean, you see Gillespie got in foul trouble on Saturday. I mean, there's a perfect example right there.
Right.
You know,
and as soon as he came off the court, Seton Hall came back.
So I know.
You don't have anybody that can step into that role, and you haven't developed anybody that can step into that role. So of course you have to play Colin 30 plus minutes because you don't have that luxury.
Yeah, you're right.
And like I said, I'm not criticizing, you know, who he puts in or lineups or anything like that, but just from the sake of, I would want to preserve my top guys as much as possible. So come March, they're fresh and they're ready to go. And I mean, look at the area team here. Like, you know, we're in New Jersey, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. I mean, look at the Sixers. This happens to the Sixers every single year. Throughout the season, how much playing time does Joel Embiid get? And then what happens when he gets to the playoffs? He's banged up because he has to play so much just to get the team to that level. You know? And that's what happens. And that's, to me, that would be the only reason why I'd be trying out the Pattersons, the Longinos, like you said.
What about Njoku over Dixon? I mean, can he give you anything? And I like Dixon. I think he's a useful player. But on the offensive end, I mean, he's pretty limited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, can Njoku give you a lot of the same stuff that Dixon can give you? I mean,
we don't know.
And we're never going to find out. And that's I guess that's kind of frustrating. Look, my biggest concern is the transfer portal, because I think eventually you're going to get a kid that's not patient, and he's good. You know, and Villanova has some pretty good recruits coming in that we've talked about and previously, mm-hmm. and eventually he's going to be like, you know what? I don't need this. I'll go to an ACC school or a Big Ten school, and I'll play right away.
Well, I mean, you got that one time with Quinterly.
Right.
You know, Javon, he went in the transfer portal. He sat out a year just to get out of Villanova.
And that was I was under the old system.
Yes, that was under the old system.
Right.
So now you have a new system in place that makes
where you don't have to wait.
Where you don't have to wait. That, like you said, that would be a concern for me as well.
Oh, it's a huge concern. And on the flip side, I don't see Jay Wright taking in anybody that's going to be an immediate contributor. He brings in Daniels, but Daniels, you know, he came from the AAC, and that's a different level.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as you could tell, he's a guy that's coming off the bench mostly. So, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the long run. But for this season, yeah, I mean, it could come back to bite him in the end in March. We'll see how it plays out.
All right. Well, moving on a little bit, you were actually at the Seton Hall game.
Yes.
You did witness that. Talk a little bit about the feel of that game, what you saw, and then also what did you think about kind of the return or the coming out party, I guess you can kind of say a little bit, for Brian Antoine?
Yeah, I mean, I liked Villanova's energy in the first half. I don't know if you noticed. I thought they played really, really they were very active. But on the offensive side, especially with the ball movement, and the offense was really humming. And then on the defensive end, I thought they really got after it. And you could tell they really out-rebounded Seton Hall by a lot, especially in the first half on the offensive side. They were grabbing all the offensive rebounds. When Antoine did come into the game, I noticed a different energy with the team and a different pace.
Mm-hmm.
A little more up-tempo, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. I like what he brings. You saw he immediately came in, and he made a three right off the dribble.
Yep.
Which I love Gillespie and Moore, but that's not their strong suit. They're usually coming off ball screens. So I'd like to see him maybe slash a little more, get to the hole, but again, he's got long arms. He's a pretty good defender. You know, we've been asking to see more of him, and hopefully we will. You know,
well, hopefully he's healthy.
Hopefully he's healthy. That was a big concern, and it's been, you know, one of the reasons that's been keeping him off the floor. The second half of the game, they on the defensive side, I noticed that the perimeter defense wasn't as good. Seton Hall's big man got in foul trouble, and he ended up fouling out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was kind of hurting them. They were running some backdoor cuts, and he had a couple easy dunks. But then in the second half, they started hitting him with the outside shot. Because you remember in the first half, Seton Hall didn't shoot very well. So the shots started dropping in the second half, and they kind of got back in the game. And then until the end when, you know, it got into the free throw shooting competition at the end of the game. But, yeah, it was an interesting perspective to see the team in a different way. That arena is very, very nice arena. It's in the Prudential Center in downtown Newark. That's where Seton Hall plays their home games. A very good crowd. I would say it's pretty much a sellout, and a good number of Villanova fans came up. Either they took the train or they took the, you know, made the 2-hour drive up there. So it was a good experience. It was a really good time.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, great lead into our sponsor for today. If you're looking for a great time, there's no better place to go to than Bar Anticipation in Belmar, New Jersey. We are both, Chris and myself, very familiar with Bar A. A lot of good times there. One of us did work there for a while. But great place to go. Tuesday nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights. They actually have a great restaurant / grill there now as well, with some really great food. The place is hopping Tuesday night, thirsty Tuesdays, and 25-cent drafts. I think that's the start of it. Beat the clocks. So if you're in the area, Belmar, South Belmar area, definitely stop into Bar Anticipation, or as we all call it, Bar A. All right, Chris, last topic. How things are playing out now so far in the season. We got four starters that are in double figures, averaging double figures for the year. Who do you think, whether it's somebody who is underperforming that needs to step up, or if somebody who is playing good that needs to even step it up even more, but who do you think needs to take the next step and show more for this team to really get going and get back into the top 10, top five as far as ranks in the nation?
Well, it's clear that, and you could see it when I was at the game and I saw it, the two best players on the floor usually are Gillespie and Moore. And even when they're playing other teams. Now, I know Roden is a really good player for Seton Hall, but Villanova needs a third scoring option, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You can count on Colin, and his three-point shooting, again, is great this year. He's over 40% again. And he had the quietest 21 points I've ever seen on Saturday. But he had some huge threes. Moore, also, again, I love the way he drives to the rim. He's fearless. He also can shoot when he needs to. His percent's down a little bit from three, but he has it in him. So you need a third option. It's got to be either Slater or Samuels. I don't trust Caleb Daniels, and Eric Dixon, I think, is a little bit limited on the offensive side. I guess I'll go with Slater. If he's in the starting lineup, you got to get a little more out of him on the offensive side. So I'll say Slater.
You know, Slater started the season like hot. Like, he came out his first couple games, he was really, I mean, he was probably the second, you know, scoring threat on the team there for a while. Then he kind of went into that slump for a couple of games. And he really, I mean, that last Seton Hall game, he did, you know, he put together a better game. He's definitely kind of shied away from shooting the threes. The first couple games of the season, he was shooting a lot more threes. And I, for some reason, he's kind of shied away from that. So I definitely think he needs to trust his ability. I mean, he's shooting 48% from the three-point line, even after some of these struggles these last couple games. I'm going to go with Samuels, just because of the experience factor. You know, Samuels has been around for such, it seems like forever almost. Even in that Seton Hall game, he kind of missed a couple of, like, he's always got the ball around the basket, but for some reason it doesn't finish.
See, I think that of Dixon. I think Dixon doesn't have good hands.
Well, yeah, when Dixon's posting up or backing down, that's the play. But it just seems like Samuels, I don't know, he's either he gets a rebound and then he can't go back up, or he drives it a little bit and then he does the jump stop, which is good, but then he gets stuck, and, you know, then he kind of gets it up on the glass and then it doesn't go, you know, it doesn't go in, whatever it is. He needs to be the more decisive, and like you said, that third option of, hey, if I either got the lane, I'm going to take it. If I'm going to shoot it, I'm going to shoot it. You know, he's got to make up his mind quicker to, you know, put the shot up, in my opinion. And I think he just needs to do that, because based upon how much time he's played in his 5 years at Villanova, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, nothing should be overwhelming for him, because he's been in all these situations before. And I think he needs to use that experience and, you know, kind of, I guess, have more belief in himself that he can play. Because, I mean, he's a great player, And every once in a while, you see it where, like, he'll score 20-something points, but then the next game he'll score 5, you know? So it's a little frustrating because you do see how well he does play some games and, you know, the way he shoots. And then there's other games where it's Brick City and he's very indecisive. So, you know, not a knock on him whatsoever. I mean, I love him as a player. He's shooting over 40% as well from the 3-point line. They're top. Actually, it's funny. They have 1, 2, 3. They have 6 guys on this team that are shooting over 40% from the 3-point line. Dixon is actually shooting 44% from the 3-point line. Not that you want him shooting a lot of threes, but, you know, he's even at 40-something percent. So, you know, you got guys that can shoot. It just, I don't know. Some of them just need to have that confidence in themselves that, you know, and Slater to the degree. I think he's got to go back to that three and, you know, believe that shot's going in all the time. Yeah, you know, because he does pass it up a lot. I mean, it's good because he's taking it and he's driving it, and a lot of times he's getting fouled or whatever. But, you know, for your confidence level, you know, seeing the ball go through the basket when you make that three definitely gives you a lot more confidence. Now, once again, this team for the year so far, they're winning the turnover margin by 3.6 per game. So that means that the opposing team is making close to 4 more turnovers than Villanova. So they protect the ball great. They're actually winning, Chris, in the rebounding margin as well, where they're averaging 3.3 more rebounds per game than their opponents. And you made mention of that you really thought that was something in the Seton Hall game that they definitely you noticed that they were winning the rebounding battle.
Oh, I did, especially in the first half. It was a big difference, and I thought it was they got a lot of second chance opportunities on the offensive glass in the first half too, and there was a lot of putbacks. I think they've been doing a great job. The defense is a little inconsistent at times, but like you said, they're cutting down way, way more on the turnovers than they have even last season. And again, when you have two guys that have been around the program like Justin Moore and Colin Gillespie, I mean, you expect that, you know, and I think that's something that can carry them far, even though right now they've struggled. And, you know, the game against Creighton was such a disappointment. I think everyone kind of got a little down on them. But I really liked what I saw coming off that long break against Seton Hall. I think you have to be encouraged by that win. And Seton Hall's a pretty good team. They were ranked at the time. So
yeah, we got Creighton coming up next, right?
Yeah. Yep. So you get them at home. That game is tomorrow night at 8:30 on FS1.
Yep.
So that's a good, you know, a good lead in right there. So maybe you can get a little revenge.
Well, I think you're definitely going to need to get revenge tomorrow. You need to definitely get on a nice little winning streak. They've won 2 in a row after losing 2 in a row. So they need to get some wins down. To me, now's the time to do it with the Big East. I know there's a lot of good things to say about some of the other teams in the Big East and their rankings, but Villanova is the team that should be winning these games. They should be the number one team in the Big East with the talent that they got. and they just need to go out and do it. Bottom line.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they come out tomorrow night. I think they're going to be really motivated. You're going to get a good effort. I don't think it was a case so much in that Creighton game in December where, oh, Creighton was so much better than Villanova. I think it was more of a case like Villanova played pretty bad that night.
Yes.
So I think you'll see a big difference tomorrow.
Plus, they were coming off that Baylor loss where they only scored,
39 points. Yeah, it was just a disaster.
So
yeah.
I think that definitely, I think, carried over
to that. Yeah, they were flat. I don't want to make excuses. These kids are, used to the travel and things like that, but they were in Waco, Texas on a Sunday. And then on Friday, they had to go to Omaha, Nebraska.
Yep.
So did that affect them? Yeah, probably. I don't know. Did they come back to Philly in between? Or did they just go from Texas to Nebraska and stay there all week? I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know how they're handling the travel, especially during COVID with the restrictions. So who knows? That might have had something to do with it. But I think you're going to see a much better effort tomorrow night. I think they're going to come out and you'll probably see a different team. You'll see a team closer to what we saw on New Year's Day against Seton Hall.
I hope so. I hope so. Well, Chris, as always, thank you for the for your time. I love talking Villanova basketball with you. And thanks again, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
All right. We'll see you. And good luck in that Creighton game. Go Nova.
What's up, Nova Nation? If you're looking for something new to listen to, our friend Nicole Adamo has a new podcast called Not Just One of the Guys. Episodes drop every Sunday at midnight, and it's available on all streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts. Check it out, Nova Nation. You won't be disappointed. If you like listening to the Nova Nation podcast, go check us out on our website at www.novanationpodcast.com. Give us a like. Thanks. What's up, Nova Nation? If you have any questions that you would like to have answered or discussed on the show, email us at thenovanationpodcast@gmail.com.